Pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
Yes, indeed. Second hour of the program begins right now. Jim Beam Bourbon Tour is underway. You can take advantage of it here at Gomer's. 39th and Broadway, right here in Midtown. That's 3838 Broadway here in Kansas City, Missouri. Downtown, Midtown, Plaza area, anywhere around here. Come on by. Take advantage. Sample all the flavors. The Jim Beam Ladies will be happy to pour you a little drink, a little taster of all the great Jim Beam flavors, so you can try it right now at Gomer's. Come on out. We're at 3838 Broadway. I've also got some great swag bags. The bags are perfect for taking to a Chiefs game. They're the clear plastic ones. So that's great. You can grab you a couple of bottles of Jim Beam, put them in the bag, and head on out for the weekend. Stock up on everything you need here at Gomer's. They got a great selection of everything, wines and beers and spirits and everything. Jim Beam, of course, my personal favorite. Come check it out right now. The black, Jim Beam Black Extra Aged, the honey, the apple, vanilla, peach. Come sample them right now at Gomer's here in Midtown. And we're signing people up to win a beautiful Yeti cooler. It's a backpack cooler. It's perfect for tailgating, and it's here at Gomer's, 3838 Broadway. Let's start things off in the drill in Cleveland, Ohio. Garrett Bush, 92.3 FM, is there. The fan in Cleveland. Garrett, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. What's the fallout now that the suspensions are down for Myles Garrett and everyone involved in the brawl?
Well, you look at it from a standpoint of Myles Garrett. He's been having a great year, but early in the year he's had some suspension issues or some off the field problems with, you know, getting into with a fan, you know, punching him during the autograph session. You know, I look at it from a situation of Freddie Kitchens. You look at Baker Mayfield walking out on the press conference with a local reporter, you know, Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry with shoes and shields. And now you have this situation with one of your best defensive players and even a guy, you know, threatening the life of a local reporter or a local personality. So it's just a microcosm of what's going on, and it just seems like it's an undisciplined ball play with the Browns, and it's just been a thing that's been going on all year.
Is it more considered the problem of Freddie Kitchens not controlling these guys or John Dorsey bringing them into the organization in the first place?
Hey, I'll tell you what, it's a little of both. You look at the mix of guys that Dorsey has brought in from Kareem Hunt, you know, Odell Beckham Jr., which has been almost the least of our problems. We thought here locally we might have more of a problem with him so far. But I think it's a little growth. When you look at Freddie Kitchens, first-year head coach, you know, Myles Garrett has had some penalties as far as 15-yard penalties is concerned. But it looks like it reared its ugly head at the most inopportune time. The Browns have been, you know, they've beat the Steelers and the Ravens first time. They've done that in a very long time. And, you know, the Browns have won two games in a row. I think it's going to be a situation where Freddie Kitchens needs to win out to keep his job. It's going to be more difficult to do that without one of your best defensive players. So I think it's a little both between Dorsey and Freddie Kitchens. So we'll see how it plays out going down the stretch.
Usually long before any firing comes about, there are a wish list put together by fans. Is there a wish list of who would replace Freddie Kitchens? Is there a popular name?
Well, you know, there was a popular, unpopular name. One of the guys that we talked about last year, we've heard Mike McCarthy, and then a guy that's a local guy, in the Canton area, Josh McDaniels. He's a guy who has a pedigree, a guy that's going to command the respect, and I think he's a guy that comes from the Belichick, tree that's going to have the respect. He's a no-nonsense guy, and I think it might be a guy that, you know, fans are willing to take some more of the disciplinarian mindset now that you have some of these things going on with Myles Garrett and around the organization. He's an offensive mind. We don't question whether or not he can put points on the board. The fans are more open to a guy that's a more of a hardline guy, seeing that we have some of these disciplinary issues.
Yeah, interesting. All right, what do you think? How do you think this team is going to respond? What do you think they'll do coming down the stretch?
You know, coming down the stretch, you know, one of the things that, it all depends on, and I've said this from the beginning. You guys know out there in Kansas City, it's all depending on, leading with the quarterbacks, Baker has not played up to his expectation level. This team is wildly, they have so much talent on the offensive side of the ball. Kareem Hunt has come back, and he's been showing what he can do as far as blocking, as far as what he can do catching the ball out of the backfield. You've seen him in Kansas City, and he's well worth what is advertised. If the Browns can, come out and still consistently move the ball and get these playmakers and weapons involved, and Freddie can get all these guys from Jarvis and Odell and Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb involved in the game plan, the Browns should be able to win some of these games down the stretch. And they can go on a nice little run, but it all depends on what Baker Mayfield is going to do and whether or not he can elevate the play to those guys around him, because, they're going to count on him now that you have one of your defensive stars out, especially going down the last few games of the year.
All right, Garrett Bush in Cleveland. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
You too, anytime.
To the arms of Florida.
This is where we find Ryan Green, 1010 XL, Jacksonville, Florida. Ryan, how are you, sir?
Saran, I'm good, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing well. What's the word? Are people excited, disappointed, frustrated? Nick Foles is back. What's the reaction?
Yeah, I think there was some it was about a 50-50 mix of both. It was quite the argument here for some time. Minshew or Foles, Foles or Minshew, and then Minshew goes into London 2 weeks ago and plays his worst game. So that made it a little easier for the organization to make up their mind. The fan base was still a little upset. But then Nick Foles spoke to the media on Wednesday, and just listening to that man talk about how much he enjoyed seeing what Gardner Minshew did, has enjoyed getting to know Gardner Minshew and tutor Gardner Minshew, and then talked about, what he can bring back to the table. It was just a little bit refreshing. So I think that kind of eased any of the Minshew mania people that were still here. Now, of course, if Nick Foles goes into Indy on Sunday and struggles, that conversation will start right back up. But for the here and now, I think people are fine with Nick Foles taking over. Because after all, Saran, the Jaguars have to know what $88 million bought them this offseason.
Yeah, and whether or not they're going to stay the course with it. The Jaguars at 4-5, very quietly, have kind of fought their way back into the mix. The Texans have the Ravens, so theoretically that could open the door up. Are Jaguar fans, and more importantly, the organization, still thinking that they can take this division down?
Oh, I don't know about the division necessarily, Saran. I think the wild card is absolutely in play. Look, I mean, the Texans have a two-game lead on the Jaguars, where they also swept them in the season series, so they basically have a three-game lead. We talk about the tiebreaker with seven to go. So you got to be realistic. Is the division too far out of reach? I believe it probably is. The wild card is not. And what's lost in the whole Myles Garrett fiasco from last night, Pittsburgh losing to fall to 5-5, I mean, there is just a jumble of AFC teams at 4-5, at 5-5, at 5-4, just a ton of teams lumped in there. And the Jaguars are very much in the mix, and we're going to see over the next 2 weeks at Indy, at Tennessee, if they can somehow pull off two road wins against teams that they could potentially beat. The Jaguars would be sitting at 6-5 and probably the leader for one of those wild card spots coming down the stretch here.
All right, who's Florida State going to end up with at head coach?
Boy, they want you to believe it was Bob Stoops a couple weeks ago. They wanted you to believe it was Bob Stoops as recently as earlier this week. Bob Stoops, I don't believe, is going to take the Florida State job. I think that ship has sailed. I think that was wishful thinking on a lot of the fan base point of view. I think certainly you're going to hear all the names from Mike Norvell and Memphis to, Matt Campbell at Iowa State. We've even heard some James Franklin talk at Penn State. I'll tell you what's interesting. Odell Higgins is the interim coach at FSU. He was also the interim coach when Jimbo left 2 years ago. He's an FSU lifer. He played there. He's been an assistant there now for almost 30 years. There is a groundswell among former FSU players to give Odell Higgins the job. And what they're searching for, what they're talking about, is you look at Ed Orgeron at LSU. There's a lot of people that didn't want Ed Orgeron to get that job, didn't think he was worthy of a job at LSU, and you look at what Coach O is doing out there. So because of the success of Orgeron, I think that puts Odell Hagans way more in the mix than maybe he would have been. I still believe they're going to hire from outside and bring somebody in, Seren, but it would not surprise me if Odell Hagans was much more in play than maybe people realize.
Yeah, and really, don't they just have to look north, too, not just west, but north? Clemson, Dabo Sweeney took over. They fired the head coach. He was an assistant on that staff. They bumped him up, and that's clearly worked. I think that's how that came about, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's exactly right. No, you are correct about that, absolutely. And keep in mind, they wanted to fire Dabo after he took over the head coaching job. They wanted to run him out of there a couple of times, and good thing for them, they did not do that.
Yeah, and finally, Florida minus 6.5 against the Missouri Tigers. Missouri fans will tell you, we don't know why, but for whatever reason, we beat Florida. They have confidence, even with a three-game losing streak going on. What's the feeling from Florida fans as they take on the Tigers?
They should have confidence, the Missouri fans should, because they do beat Florida. For whatever reason, Florida has been awful against Missouri. You look last year, it was Florida's homecoming game, and Drew Locke and the boys came down here and just ran roughshod all over the Gators. Look, I made this point on my show today. I think Florida tomorrow is a huge game for this reason. Are they going to win a national title this year? No. Are they going to win the SEC East? No. But people want to talk about, is Florida back? To me, Florida is back when they win games that they should win. Tennessee, they should have won that game this year. They did. South Carolina, the same thing. Last week, a game against Vanderbilt, the same thing. Florida should beat Missouri. If Florida starts taking care of business against the teams they should beat, at that point I'm ready to say Dan Mullen has the Gators back, at least where they were a few years ago. I expect Florida to win the game, but I think because of the early kick, because of the weather factor, it could be very interesting down the stretch.
All right, great stuff. Ryan Green in Jacksonville. We appreciate it, buddy. Have a great weekend.
Seren, thank you, man. Anytime.
So we did it up to Philly, party down like real hillbillies.
Eitan Shander, ESPN 97.3 and Fox Sports The Gambler in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, you're next. Eitan, how are you, buddy?
Seren, first time I've ever had that as my intro. I appreciate that. Wow.
Yeah, we do what we can. We do what we can.
Eagles. You always take care of me, and I'm grateful for it. Thank you.
You bet. You bet. Absolutely. The Eagles getting 3.5 from the Patriots. Some people are looking at the spread saying it should be more. Do you think the number's right on this game?
I think it's right initially for what I thought the reason why was, but now I'm kind of perplexed, meaning I thought this thing would have been bet up a little more. But it hasn't moved much at all, if at all, depending on where you are, right? So I now, looking at it, I'm a little more concerned, and I don't think that this is anything remotely close to a 3-4, 7-point, maybe 7-point game, if depending on a backdoor. But I think the reality is New England is just better equipped to win this game. But there are things you can point to the Eagles, there are things that Philadelphia has done right or can do right that kind of even bump up on the hierarchy of any given Sunday to, okay, well, it's not outside the realm of possibility.
Where do Eagles fans sit on what they expect from the rest of the year? I know the Patriots is a tough game. Seahawks is a tough one, but they're both at home.
Yes.
Then at Dolphins, Giants, at Redskins, Cowboys at home, and at Giants. There's a lot of softies on that schedule as you come down the stretch run. Four out of the last five are teams that are playing for draft picks. The other one's the Cowboys, and they're a 5-4 team right now at home. I know it's rough the next two, but the stretch run looks great for the Eagles. I think they win this division. Do Philly fans think that?
Right. Yes and no. And the reason why is because of the two games you mentioned. So I think it's split. I think that it's more probably 65-35, 65 in the sense of, well, just look at the overall schedule that you laid out. But I think that 35% of us, and I'll be vocal and say I'm in that minority, if you will, looks at the next two games as something that I can't separate from the last stretch, meaning, yeah, Dallas has it significantly harder than the Philadelphia Eagles do in the final stretch of the season, but that's after Seattle. And yes, next two games are at home, The Patriots have had a bye week. Who knows what they've concocted to stop Wentz the first time that he's ever seen him up there, Belichick in New England. And I would love to feel more comfortable about any home field advantage against the Seahawks, but they keep winning games on the road.
I don't think there's any way they drop both those games. I think they get at least one of the next two, and then they enjoy the rest of that schedule and end up in a pretty good spot. Tell me, how good is Villanova? What do we think of what they're going to be after what they did against Ohio State?
Well, I thought that that was a pretty big opportunity loss by Villanova. And I will say, I do agree with you ultimately that if they can split over the next two games with the Eagles, then you're right, that they should win the division, and that's a good futures bet. Villanova, I think, was a big disappointment in the moment because of the just advantages that were kind of opened up in circumstance by Ohio State. With that said, Jay Wright has always been able to build a team around kids that have been there, and even young kids, even kids in their second year, third year, guys that haven't gone the full distance, he's been able to corral and bring them back. I think that the expectations here for Nova are they can be a dangerous team, you know, like a middle seed, and really get in the right placing in the tournament can do some damage. And I think that's kind of where we're at. And Jay Wright in the tournament, when things slow down, is going to have an advantage. But they're not for a lack of talent by any means.
All right, yeah, and trust me, Jay Wright's always going to coach them up. We know they're going to get better. All right, great stuff. Eitan Shander in Philadelphia, we appreciate the time, man. Have a great weekend.
Soren, you too, my friend. Anytime, I'm here. Thanks. Seattle, San Francisco,
Roxy Bernstein, 95.7 The Game, A's Radio, ESPN. He's in San Francisco, California. Roxy, how are you, buddy?
What's up, Soren? How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'll tell you what's not up. The Warriors. Listen, during that finals, with everything looming, I asked you the question last year, have we seen the end of the Warriors dynasty? And you were somewhat, I would say, irritated by the question. Or certainly thought it was a foolish. You certainly thought it was a foolish question. They're 2-10. I know there's injuries. I know Klay Thompson will be back. I know that eventually they're going to get why can I not remember his name? Best shooter
Steph
that ever
Curry?
Lived. Steph Curry, thank you. I know they're going to get him back. But they're not going to get younger. They're not going to get their youth back, and injuries will continue to be a problem. That's what I think. Are the Warriors, did they make a mistake? Should they have just shut it down and started, if they could, shipping off pieces and look to rebuild?
No, because I think next year, Soren, they go right back to the top of the Western Conference. When they get Curry
really?
And Klay back, and certainly with Draymond. And keep in mind, they're under a hard cap this year, which has made it difficult for Bob Myers to maneuver and make the move. I do believe that he will be active come this offseason, and I do think he will be creative about how this Warriors roster moves forward. And keep in mind, with as bad as they're going to do this year, that means they're going to have probably a top five pick in the draft. So in a lot of ways, this was like the San Antonio Spurs years ago when they drafted David Robinson and had that redshirt season, and then they got Tim Duncan. But there's probably not a Tim Duncan in this draft. But the Warriors are going to get a big piece that's going to help them for the future. So, yes, this is going to be a disastrous season where I'd be shocked if the Warriors got 20 wins. Which means that they're going to get a great piece of the future, and they're going to be fine, I think, come next fall when they can regroup for the 2021 season.
All right, let me ask you this. The Oakland Raiders have got the Bengals. They're given 11 to the Bengals in this game. Then they go to the Jets. They're crap, too. They figure to win two games. Chiefs play a tough game in Mexico against the Chargers, or what has been a tough game for the Chiefs. And then they've got a bye week. I think that this division is virtually tied. I do think the Chiefs are going to win against the Chargers. It's not a given. I also don't think going on the road against the Jets, who did beat the Cowboys in New York, is necessarily a given. But I think the Raiders should win it. This is the tied division right now. Is that what Raiders fans are talking about?
I think Raiders fans believe that they can win the AFC West, that it's not just the Kahan, it's the Kansas City and Andy Reid. and the Chiefs are just going to have a parade to the championship. And look, I think Raider fans that are realistic know that Kansas City clearly is the team to beat. They are the better football team. But with the way the Raiders have played and the struggles that the Chiefs have had, that they believe that they're a threat to the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, they still have to go to Kansas City. But the Raiders are playing some pretty good football. They have bought into what John Gruden wants them to do, and they're relying on that running game with Jacobs, which has been terrific, and for those offensive linemen to ball people at the line of scrimmage. Darren Waller has emerged as a legitimate force to tight end. So the Raiders honestly believe that they are a threat to Kansas City and that they will be a playoff team, where I don't think a lot of people thought that was the case, even in the beginning of the season, considering all the turmoil that was going on with Antonio Brown and still the backlash from trading Amari Cooper and Khalil Mack last year. Well, the Mack trade, yes, look, it's hard to replace maybe the best pass rusher in the game, but the Raiders have done a pretty good job by using that draft pick on Jacobs, who's emerged as one of the premier running backs in the NFL.
All right, let's turn our attention to the 49ers. Their first loss came in a great football game with the Seattle Seahawks, so certainly no shame in losing that game, although they do have to go back to Seattle, which makes the division very much in play. Cardinals at home, Packers at home, at the Ravens, at the Saints, Falcons at home, Rams at Seahawks. What do you smell the final record of the 49ers being?
I think they're still going to be a 12-win team. Maybe even 13. The things have to go right for them. And they're dealing with a lot of injuries right now. Emmanuel Sanders, they picked up in the trade for the Broncos, is dinged up. Joe Staley is hurt again on the offensive line. I'd be surprised if George Kittle was back for the game against the Cardinals on Sunday. So they're dealing with significant injuries, even coming out of that Seattle game and some stuff left over from previous weeks. But this still is a really good football team, surrender. They're led by their defense, and that's the key, especially the defensive line that has been, I think, paramount to their success so far this season. They should win on Sunday, although it's a short week, and an Arizona team that up until the game earlier this season, and even that one was close, has had the 49ers number in recent years. Now, this is a different 49ers team, but it's weird because this week, surrender, Kyle Shanahan's been taking criticism for the way he handled the end of that game against Seattle, which I think some of it is warranted, but some of it is unfair. But this is a team that's coming off their first loss, their first bit of adversity, and we'll see how they respond against the Cardinals on Sunday.
Yeah, we will see. All right, you ready for a bold and daring prediction?
Okay, let me hear it.
The 49ers season ends with a postseason loss to either Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, or Russell Wilson, because they're better quarterbacks.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. And look, the Niners saw it firsthand, Russell Wilson, on Monday night. And they're going to see Aaron Rodgers coming up next week. And you're talking about Hall of Fame caliber quarterbacks. And Jimmy G still has a ways to go. And he got lucky with some of those throws that they weren't picked off. But the Niners still had the opportunity to surrender. They intercepted Russell Wilson in overtime. And then went down and missed it, what would have been a game-winning field goal. So they'll have faced Russell Wilson twice. They're going to face Brees and Rodgers coming up. So it's not like that this group will be frightened by what they have to go up against.
Roxy Bernstein in the Bay Area. Great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
You too, sir. I'll talk to you soon.
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Seren Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
He was there for Montana Magic at Arrowhead.
Back to pass, Montana. Cox his arm. Looks right. No one there. Looks left. Throws in the end zone. Touchdown! Yeah! Joe Montana has done it again!
He was there for the drought breaker in Houston.
Miles Davis starts the playoffs with a bang! 6 yards, touchdown, Chiefs!
And he was there for everything in between.
And it's crazy. This is terrible. This is one of the worst catastrophes in the world. It's a terrific race, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, the humanity.
No one knows the Chiefs better. He's Adam Teicher of ESPN on the program.
You bet he is. We're live and on the road. We're at Gomer's. Come on down and see us. 39th and Broadway. 3838 Broadway is the location. The Jim Beam Bourbon Tour here hits Midtown. The great, great location. As a lot of folks stocking up for the weekend, as should you. You're off work, Kansas City. You ain't working, so come on in. Grab whatever you need, and, of course, sample all the great flavors of Jim Beam. I've got some of my favorites on our table. I was just treated to a wonderful taste. This is the Apple Jim Beam with a splash of cranberry. Absolutely fantastic. Oh, my goodness. What a wonderful treat. You got to be careful with that, though. You got to be careful with that. Ooh, those go down real easy. Real easy. That's good stuff. You can come try it for yourself. The Jim Beam Bourbon Tour is at Gomer's today. We're broadcasting live at 3838 Broadway. 39th and Broadway basically is where we are. And you can check out the apple flavor, honey flavor, black extra aged, vanilla, peach. Come on down and enjoy. And, of course, always remember, drink responsibly. The folks at Jim Beam would love for you to enjoy their incredible product, the number one bourbon in the world, the official bourbon of the Kansas City Royals. They want to make sure you do it responsibly so you can enjoy it for a long, long time. So please enjoy responsibly. But come on in and get stocked up with the Jim Beam bourbon. It is good, good stuff, and it's available right now at Gomer's. Let's talk to Adam Teicher. He joins us on our Sprint guest line, brought to you by our friends at E. Edwards Workwear. Adam, how are you, sir?
Good, Saran. How you doing today?
I'm doing really good. You were out there, as you always are. It's more noteworthy, I guess, than I was out there. But you're always there for the coordinators. I try to get there as much as I can. And I thought this was a tough one for those guys today. They had a lot of things to answer for. Now, the good news is they all sucked. So none of them really had to wear it all. By that, I mean each one of them's branch of the team, special teams, defense, offense, had their problems. I thought it was noteworthy that Patrick Mahomes said exactly that, that, hey, all three phases of our team had a chance to seal this win, and none of us got it done. What did you think of how they handled what were probably the toughest collection of questions they've had to deal with so far this year?
Yeah, I mean, I like how at least Dave Tobe, he owned the special teams problems, and Spagnuolo maybe to a little lesser extent, but he owned the defensive problems. If you're asking me for a biggest takeaway from today, biggest play of the game offensively, I guess you could say, for the Chiefs was that 3rd and 2 where they could have put the game away, right? How do you have a play with one option? I know they made it work against the Ravens a few weeks earlier, and that's great. But you got to anticipate that maybe they've scouted you, that the Titans had scouted you, and maybe expect that play to come. And I just don't know how you give your quarterback one receiver, and if he's not open, then it's up to you, buddy. You're going to have to run for it. I particularly since the Chiefs may have been in 4-down territory there. I really question that play call now. How the Chiefs could do that in a situation like that, particularly when your playmaker there was not Travis Kelce, not Tyreek Hill, not Mecole Hardman, but Blake Bell.
Well, and I'm with you, and I think the the idea is that you're going to surprise them. They won't expect Blake Bell to be the target at this time. So I guess I get it, and it just didn't work. I thought Josh Briscoe had a nice question today about the idea of, and he's kind of had this theme for a couple of weeks. I know he's talked about it on his show about going for it on 4th down, particularly 4th and short. And, he mentioned 4th and 2, 4th and 3, 4th and 2, they kick field goals. Does Andy Reid need to be more aggressive flatly? I mean, that 4th and 2 is an obvious go for it down unless it's a chip shot field goal.
Yeah, I do think the Chiefs maybe need to think along those lines, maybe be in more in 4-down mode more often. They've kicked 4 field goals each of the last 2 weeks, right? Now, one was with Matt Moore at quarterback, so maybe you excuse that one. But they had to kick 4 field goals, and then they tried the 2 late in the game and didn't get either one of those to work, obviously. I mean, that's just too much. They need to convert some of those into 7 points. So, Yeah, I'm kind of with you on some of this. I think there are situations where the Chiefs can be more aggressive.
Yeah, yes, excuse me. Yes, and Seth Kizer pointed it out. I mean, by having only one option, he's basically handcuffing Patrick Mahomes and saying, I trust my play call more than I trust you. And yeah. is this maybe going to be the wake-up call for Andy Reid that he needs to flat-out trust his quarterback more and just let him drop back with more of a traditional pass and let him find the receiver since he seems to be so damn good at it?
Yeah, I don't know why. I get that Pat Mahomes is in his second-year starter and he's a young guy, but he's earned the trust at this point. He's the best player on this team. He's the best quarterback in the league probably. I'll certainly take him. I don't know why you go to a play with one option on that deal. I think that is absolutely the wrong play in a deal where you got to give him some options. You got to give him something else other than Blake Bell or run. That you got to give him more than that.
Do you think it'll change?
I would hope so. I mean, I'm on board with Andy Reid's play calling, so I think so. I mean, I don't think this is going to be a struggle for them going forward, but we'll see. But just mystified by, the week after the Vikings game, those last 2 minutes, the Chiefs just did just about everything right. In the last 2 minutes last week, and then this week they just did everything wrong, and it's hard to know how you can go from one to the other.
We're talking to Adam Teicher here in the program, Chiefs Insider. He's brought to you by our friends at E. Edwards Workwear. You can get all the cold weather gear you need for the next Chiefs game coming up in December. A lot of December games at eeworkwear.com. Or find the location nearest you at eeworkwear.com. Adam, I brought up Blake Bell, and I asked it to both Eric Berry and Dave Tobe. And listen, I get it. Somebody's got to say he can go or not go, and the coaches can't be over there asking a guy, how do you feel? You feel okay? Do you mean it? Are you sure? You got to have a system, right? And that system is somebody says he can go, and you put him in if he can go. But do they need to tweak that system? Did they fail? I don't understand how Blake Bell can be so hurt that here we are Friday after the game and he's not practicing from an injury that happened in game, but he was okay to be the guy to throw the ball to on a one option only play. And he's okay to be the guy on the outside, the most important position in blocking for the field goals. He's okay to do that, but now he still can't even practice 4 days later.
Yeah. And you wonder whether the Titans knew that he wasn't very mobile at that point, and they came on his side. They overloaded his side on the rush on the last field goal, knowing they could pick on him. So yeah, that certainly is pretty fishy for sure. And I don't know what happened there. Maybe there was some kind of breakdown where Blake Bell shouldn't have been in there. I certainly don't know. I wasn't privy to those conversations, but you wonder a little bit how he could be in a key spot on two of the game's biggest plays when he obviously was having an issue there.
All right. So bah humbug, negative, 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 right? There it all is. That all being said, it literally took every one of those screw ups, for lack of a better term, every single one of them to beat this team. So at the end of the day, is this potentially the wake up call? And is this team, which did everything they could to shoot themselves in the foot, and they still just barely lost the game on the road, do we need to be thinking much more positively about this team? Because they're never going to screw that many things up all in one game again the rest of the year.
Yeah, I mean, that's one way of looking at it. The other is that every loss the Chiefs have had, and this is even going back to last year, Pat Mahomes' first year as a starting quarterback, it's always taken a good effort by a good team to beat the Chiefs. And I guess I'm not faulting Tennessee's effort the other day. They certainly made a lot of plays when they had to, but that's not a great team. I mean, they're an okay team. They're, maybe an 8-8 team, 7-9, whatever. They're not going to make the playoffs. This was a loss. This to me stands out among those reasons. I mean, I think all the other teams I know all the teams the Chiefs lost to last year. All four of them made the playoffs, and two of them went to the Super Bowl. And then this year, I think all those teams are going to make the playoffs. But the Chiefs or the Titans aren't going to make the playoffs. This was a little different. So this shakes my confidence in the Chiefs a little bit in that regard. You're right. I mean, it took an incredible string of bonehead plays toward the end for it to happen. But they did. So you just wonder where the Chiefs are right now. I mean, I think this is not really who they've been on special teams, particularly with those kicking screw-ups at the end of the game. And this is not really, we know they have enough offensively to be better than kicking four field goals for two straight weeks. We know that. But defensively, are they good enough to hold up? I don't know. I don't know where they are defensively. What we saw last week was kind of a weird deal with not just the results, but who the Chiefs were playing at times. So a lot of their better guys who have been playing well for them didn't get a lot of snaps last week, which was kind of puzzling.
I think, offense is, I think most fans would say, is easier for them to get their arms around and figure out and see where something breaks down. Defenses, you don't know what the coverage responsibilities are. That gets a little harder. And special teams oftentimes is a complete mystery to us. You just mentioned it. We've talked about it. We've had some of the stats out there. Dave Tobe has like 7 of the 10 best special teams. Like, there are different sites that'll quantify special teams. He's had 7 of the 10 best special teams of all time for 3 different franchises. All right, I think he is undeniably the greatest special teams coach that has ever lived. And I wouldn't even waste any time arguing. I'd just say you're a fool if somebody tried to argue with me. That being said, why do they suck this year? They're not just off, they suck. They do all kinds of stupid things. Yeah. What the hell? How does this happen? Is this a sign? And listen, I hope not, and I don't think this is the case, but I'm going to ask you. Is this a sign that the Andy Reid message is getting stale?
Well, yeah, we'll see about that one. I don't think so. I mean, Dave Tobe didn't get dumb overnight, but, they've had an unusual number of penalties. That's been a problem on special teams. He's sticking with Mecole Hardman. I mean, Mecole Hardman might bring the ship down as a return guy. I mean, there's been a lot of mistakes there. And he doesn't seem to have that instinct for that. I mean, he's fast and can make guys miss, but you got to be a good decision maker back there. And it's getting harder and harder to trust him. I think that's been part of the problem. Dave Tobe is just convinced that Mecole Hardman's going to be a great returner. Well, he may be someday. I defer to his judgment. He knows what it takes. But right now, that's not what the Chiefs need. They don't need to be developing the guy. They need something they can count on back there. And I think right now, Hardman is hurting them on special teams. And they need to get Tyreek Hill or somebody they can trust a little more as a return guy.
Yeah, I buy that the skills are there and that he'll get to do it. And I'd also buy that, hey, we've had so many injuries, we're moving guys in and out, or we've had to shape the roster where we really don't have that good of special teams talent, that we've got some guys out of spot. I don't know. I'm open to anything. And like I said, I'm open to just coincidentally, a lot of crappy things went wrong at once. I don't have the answer for it, but it is just so puzzling because Dave Tobe has been so good at doing this. We're talking to Teicher here in the program. Going down to Mexico to play the Chargers, what do you expect in that game?
I think the Chiefs, if you go back the last few years, have just matched up really well with the Chargers. I know they lost that game toward the end of last season, but they led by 2 touchdowns midway through the fourth quarter. And credit to the Chargers for coming back and finding a wave where the Chiefs didn't cover Mike Williams on the 2-point conversion. So credit to them. But the Chiefs have kind of had their way in the other 3 3/4 games of the last 2 years against these guys. And I think the matchups are there again for the Chiefs if they can take advantage of them. I like the Chiefs to be able to score some points, play better on special teams. Defensively, I don't know where the Chiefs are anymore. I've given up trying to predict what we're going to see from them from week to week at this point. But I do think the Chiefs are good enough to win this game if they play their game. And, they've got to trust their quarterback and go back to the things they've done well.
You don't get to give up on the defense just yet, or on predicting the defense, because that's the next subject. I do appreciate Steve Spagnuolo saying, hey, they got us. That's one. And, you know, Dave Tobe saying that about the blocked extra point, because that's real. That's honest. Anyone who's ever coached anything at any level knows, hey, sometimes the other guy just did something good. You don't pants somebody every single play, particularly at the NFL level, where theoretically this is the best of the best. So I do appreciate just blatant honesty of, look, I'm not going to sit here and give you some BS about what we were trying to do or what it was. They just got us. So I do appreciate that. Do you think, though, that he – did you get a sense that Steve Spagnuolo got the same sense that I think all of us got? You started the question about Pinnell being down and Saunders not playing and the, you know, the fact that they really kind of changed their identity to what they had been doing when they were stopping the run. You know, later on he said, well, first down. You know, if you want to dictate to them, you got to win on first down. Well, how they were winning on first down was stopping the run, and they got away from the personnel that had stopped the run. Do you think he gets that, or do you think, no, he's kind of lost, not seeing the trees through the forest, because he still kind of coordinate like they're going to throw the ball on us when teams are starting to become disciplined and not throw the ball on them?
Yeah, and, you know, it is a little bit of a dilemma, you know, that the Chiefs seem to have trouble being able to stop both the run and the pass in the same game. I mean, you know, they've had some trouble in that, and if they're going to have to pick their poison, it's going to be a real problem for them. But, I you know, he's a smart coach. I mean, I think he can probably figure this thing out, you know, that's where the root of the problem is here. And, you know, I can see the Chargers running it all day on the Chiefs if they don't if they don't shut this thing down. So I got to believe that's going to be more of a priority, and we're going to see Damian Wilson more, and we're going to see Derek Nnadi more, and we're going to see Colin Saunders more. And guys like that are going to play more, maybe even Pinnell. You know, we're going to see those guys more on Monday night than we did against Tennessee.
We're talking to Adam Teicher here in the program as we are live at Gomer's, 3838 Broadway, giving taste tests of all the wonderful flavors of Jim Beam. So come on down and try it. I will tell you, Adam, just by the way, the apple Jim Beam with a splash of cranberry should be outlawed. I'm going to tell you, you can get some trouble there. It tastes so good. It is really a wonderful treat. You can come down and sample all the flavors. We can get to Adam Teicher and the Final Four right now. It's brought to you by our friends at the Kansas Lottery. Loyalty players have a chance to win one of two promotional giveaways to watch the Chiefs at Arrowhead Stadium this season. Both of them are in second chance drawings. Visit kslottery.com for more details. Adam, I will start you with this. Is Steve Spagnuolo a head coach again in the NFL?
No.
Okay.
He's what, 60 years old? No, I don't see it. Not particularly with the trend of hiring offensive coaches in the NFL. I don't see it.
Does Dave Tobe get a head coach job in the NFL?
No, I don't think so with him either. I think if he was going to get one, he would have gotten one already. I think Dave would be a great head coach in the NFL, but I just don't think it's going to work out for him.
Does Eric Bieniemy get a head coaching job in the NFL?
Yes, yes. Eric Bieniemy will be a head coach, maybe even this year. I think he will get a job being an offensive guy, pretty bright guy, working with Andy Reid. I think that's enough on a resume right there to get him at least in some doors for interviews and probably a job offer as well.
And finally, most importantly, when do the holiday decorations go up at the Teicher household?
That's something you would have to ask my wife about, because that is not something I participate in. Probably the weekend after Thanksgiving. We got that Saturday. The Chiefs are home against the Raiders that weekend. So I'm guessing that probably will be the day, but I'm second in command on that deal.
So after December 1?
No, I think it'll be the day before, because the Raiders game is December 1.
Oh.
So I'm thinking.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. So 11:30, they're going to go up. That's good to know. I like that you don't participate, because I don't either. My wife and I have decided that the arguments are best left undone if I don't try to get up and screw up putting the lights on the tree.
Yep.
Does that phenomenon happen at your house? Does that happen at your house, Adam, where you're asked to help put the lights on the tree, but then you're a moron everywhere you put them, and so they just become so frustrated, they're like, screw you, get out of here?
Yeah, that's kind of what it is.
Okay, good.
That's happened that way more than once, let's put it that way.
Yep. That's the story at my house, man. I am an idiot that does not know what he's doing, to which I asked my wife, so why do you keep asking me to help then? And we found I carry the crap upstairs, if asked. She carries a lot of it up, too. I'm not going to act like I do it all. But, it's just best to stay out of there. Adam, great stuff as always, my friend. Appreciate it. Enjoy the game. You're going down to Mexico, right?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Enjoy the game, and we'll talk to you when you get back from Mexico.
Absolutely, sir. I'll talk to you then.
All right, Teicher covers the Chiefs. Been doing it since 1990. You hear him. Throughout the course of the week here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, does a phenomenal job covering the Chiefs. Adam Teicher, only here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We are at Gomer's. Come and see us. Sample some Jim Beam, the flavors. What do we got here, Rudy? What are we going with this round?
This is the peach with some lemon.
Peach with some lemon. I will be sampling some peach with some lemon. I'll tell you how it is when we come back. It's the program live on the Jim Beam Bourbon Tour.
The program with Seren Petro. Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, wrapping up hour number 3. Don't forget KU pregame and the Jayhawks coming up tonight on Sports Radio 810 WHB. High school football and game of the week's over on ESPN Kansas City. So don't forget about that. You can catch the broadcast over there. It is a big night, a big weekend of sports. We're going to talk some more Chiefs. Give you some more of what we've been talking a lot about, what the coordinators are saying. We're going to give you some of the sound on that because I thought there were some interesting exchanges today. I thought the coordinators were really good, by the way. I got no anger. I'm not some hater. I'm not painting guys as morons. People who do are just, I don't know, I find it foolish. These are bright guys, but they had a bad week all around, all three of them. And I had to face the music today, and they did, and I appreciate that, and I respect that. I respect them coming out and being mature and adults and not getting bitchy. But there were some fun exchanges today. We'll give you that coming up next. We're at Gomer's. It's in Midtown. They are getting everybody ready for the weekend right now, and you can sample all these great Jim Beam flavors.
It's the Jazz End of the Hour Question on the Half Shell, sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
All right, how many NFL franchises have two 40,000-yard passers? Brought to you by Jazz and Louisiana Kitchen.